Cinco de Mayo is come and gone. All that's left is to work on the lawn. Showers of April brought flowers of May. Let's hope we've earned this brand new day. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, gliding into your consciousness with news of the arts, culture, and humanities found in abundance in western Wisconsin. This week, you're going to meet songwriter Chris Richards, who's taken it upon himself to sing some history and make it with a new album called Wisconsin River. Rob Bignell continues to fill bookshelves with volumes on hiking and other natural things to do. His latest book is Wisconsin's Best Wildflower Hikes. We'll welcome Rob back for a look at it. Amy Renshaw is an energetic writer and promoter of social issues who's working with others on a project called the Community Postcard Project. You'll get all the details you're wondering about. And we begin right here. Things are looking up all over, and we'll be able to resume some of the kinds of entertainment and illumination we're accustomed to around here. We'll check in with venues as news arrives of their plans, and such news has arrived from the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls. Deb Johnson is a good friend of WPR, and she was eager to talk about the process of slowly reopening the doors. I'm guessing the recent email listing activities and classes and shows is the most hopeful you've put out in quite a while. How about the confidence level today compared to maybe doing the same thing 6 months ago?
Oh my gosh, it is very different. You know, we had a lot of hope the vaccination would take hold, but having done it so often, it's like going, surely we'll be open by...
Sure.
But now it's going great. We're still at COVID seating levels, so we're at about 25%, depending on how we see people in there. We do it by the table, so if there's a social group that feels comfortable, they've been living together, or they've been together, they've been vaccinated, they feel comfortable sitting together, the bigger those groups are, the more people we can get in the auditorium. It's been going well. We've got some sellout at that reduced seating. You know, people are so anxious to get out and do things, and I really feel honored and humbled that they feel very comfortable coming up here.
We'll talk about some specific things that are coming up. People need to know of all the things that you have planned. You're intending for them to be pulled off. I also know that you, because you and I have talked several times over the last challenging year, I know you've been making hay while the sun did not shine. You have done some archiving and sprucing up around the place during the downtime. How have all those projects turned out?
Really well. And we've created new opportunities that I didn't think we'd get to or that I hadn't even thought of due to excellent connections with interns at the UW-Eau Claire. Short series podcasts, which have really revolutionized some of the stuff that we would have done here. There was no sunshine, so making whatever hay we could. That did not require people to come. People could still enjoy the arts, but not be live. That has turned out to be an excellent collaboration. One was fun. It was called Ghosted. The other one is, right now we haven't got the title finished, but we have an extraordinary writer. He presents it spoken word, and then there's a discussion and dialogue and really intense personal issues, things that we need to talk about in terms of mental health, in terms of, you know, addictions and things like that. Some just excellent work. And then we're now working on another one about comedy and comedians with another young man. So we've got this short podcast series that I never would have figured we would do that has really gained some good feet and I'm really happy with it.
It's not the next thing in order chronologically, but let's talk about, because it feels important, let's talk about Rock the Riverfront, and then we'll backpedal and talk about some of the events that are planned even in May. Rock the Riverfront sounds exciting, a real potential source for some Heidi happiness.
Yes, I love your turn of phrases. Rock the Riverfront is, of course, the RCU Foundation. Having tabbed three of us arts organizations, we've been closed down, and we don't have this, you know, background revenue source. And they said now even more you know, the arts are what are going to be able to pull people, I think, out of the funk that we're in and enjoy and appreciate each other and things that are really important to us. So, you know, we're really proud to be a part of that. It is going to be a virtual Rock the Riverfront again this year. I've signed up for it. I signed my girls up to it. You do it when you can. There's a route down in Carson Park. Within that period of time of almost 3 weeks, you do your route and run it or walk it or whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. It gives different times, different places, different opportunities, different lengths for everybody to do, and it's great. And then they can vote, and the top vote getter gets a significant amount of money.
It happens virtually June 5th to June 28th. Deb Johnson on the phone with us, Executive Director at Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. We are looking ahead, anticipating for the first time in a long time, being able to actually enjoy many of what's on their calendar. I think we'll kind of bounce around here because it's exciting to know that you're going to have a show in the main performance space. Next week is a popular show, the Johnny Rogers Show.
Yes, actually we have two next week. So we have a bus and large group series that did not fill up on buses because the buses weren't feeling very comfortable yet. Mm-hmm. And we opened it up to the public. So we have Ole and Lena coming in on the 12th. That's Wednesday, but that's already full. Johnny Rogers has a matinee show on Thursday. And I believe we have a few spots we can do. Oh, actually, on Ole and Lena, we do have a few spots that could go up into the balcony. And then the Friday night show is full. On the floor, we have tables, and that filled up quite quickly because he's very popular.
Yeah.
And then we have some places in the balcony, and we filled those up. Hopefully, we'll be able to start, you know, going beyond the 25 to 30% of our capacity up there and get closer. But, yeah, we're excited. It's so exciting to have people calling and excited and noise in the building and happy people and excited
yeah.
people.
Yeah, it's been too long. It has been too long. What Ole and Lena show is that?
That is going to be Win a Cruise. In August, it will be their 50th wedding anniversary and vow renewal.
Bouncing around, spring and summer art classes. They're moving forward?
They are moving forward. We're getting a slow kind of pickup of that, but I'm happy to say, for example, we have one on Saturday. It's fun with acrylic with Kay. People are kind of waking up and saying, hey, I can do this, and these are available. And those have been getting really popular. We try to provide a variety of very beginners so that people come in, all the materials are supplied, and then we have advanced people like Alan Servos, who's going to do a watercolor and a color pencil in the next few months. That's a different level.
If you're a person who is still skittish about doing things that he or she used to do, you know, visiting the art gallery is a good way to dip your feet in the water because you can do it at your leisure and you're not going to be around a whole heck of a lot of people, and that'll make you slowly more comfortable with going to where you used to go and being comfortable doing that.
I can say that right now the entire staff here has been vaccinated. We also still require face masks and or a shield coming in. You know, people are respectful of each other, and if people haven't been vaccinated, we don't want them to be at risk, and there's distance, there's things that they can do. The classes are socially distanced as well, and it's not a lot of people. And with masks and everything, we're being very respectful of everybody's place and where mm-hmm. they're at, and we want to be healthy.
The art gallery has a full schedule, as I was just sort of alluding. And today, actually, marks the opening of the Chippewa Falls School District show. That's kind of cool. And it's followed by many more exhibits that take us all the way into the summer. That
yes.
Chippewa Falls School District show must be one that has, you know, some good traffic.
It does. This time, the elementary school kids will not have their work up there. The elementary art teachers did not feel comfortable.
Okay.
However, the middle school and the high school are going to continue on, which gives a little bit more spacing opportunities. And yes, every time we do a school district show, we have hundreds and hundreds of family members that come up, and people sometimes that have never been up here before. I'll never forget one teacher told me that one of her students in the elementary school was all excited, and he goes, if I have a piece of artwork up at the Heide Center, does that mean I'm a real artist now? That's the best. Exhibiting your artwork is an important part of many artists' paths. What is an exhibit? What can be expected? How to do it? How to frame things? How to get things exhibited properly? properly, artist receptions, all that kind of stuff. Many, many, many people have said this is the first real exhibit that they've done.
I mean, young people have such a wonderful opportunity in towns and cities where they have an art center. When I was a kid, the furthest my art went was like Parents' Night. My stick people are still stick people. Which is okay. We're talking about all the excitement at the Heide Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Deb Johnson is our guest. Summer, Deb, includes theater camps, a classic musical, Jerry Way, who's a bit skittish when planning a performance because of past postponements. I think he has his fingers crossed for the August show. It had to be fun putting this schedule together, knowing the question marks were fewer.
Yeah, it's been a challenge. What we had to do, and we've talked about this before, what happens if everything closes down again? What happens if we're at this level? And what happens if we can increase the number of people in the building? To have three different plans is crazy.
But here we are, hopeful. Good for us. There's lots more to talk about, but I have a feeling you and I will talk again to preview things that are coming up later in the summer and early fall, including things like Dinner in the Orchard and that kind of cool stuff. We've already laid out your full plate. Good for you. We'll keep our audience updated. Deb Johnson, thank you. Our fingers will continue to be crossed. Speaking of crossing, we'll cross your threshold and come to some shows and exhibits. We're excited about it.
Wonderful. Thank you, Al.
I suggest you go online to cvca.net, Chippewa Valley Cultural Association.net, for all Heide Center information. Coming up on Spectrum West, the album Wisconsin River takes us all over the state, present and past. And Rob Bignell has some suggestions on where to go when someone tells you to take a hike. Next, it can all begin on a postcard. Support for WPR comes from Trust Point in Eau Claire, dedicated to providing comprehensive and impartial investment guidance, financial plans, and personalized solutions for a family's needs and future goals. TrustPointInc.com. Support also comes from Katie's American Indian Arts, presenting the annual Mother's Day show this weekend, May 7th and 8th, featuring artists in person, including Allison Lee, Artie Yellow Horse, and more, located on Monroe Street in Madison. Amy Renshaw got degrees from UW Eau Claire, left the area, and then returned after 25 years. Since then, she's been busy using the subjects of her diplomas in impressive ways. Amy, your degrees are in English and sociology. Does that mean that you always knew that you were going to write about social issues?
Huh, that's a good question. I don't think I always knew anything when I was in college. But yeah, I have always been interested in social justice in various forms. I also studied some women's studies in college. So yeah, writing has always been my thing, and working for social justice is very rewarding.
So you are of the Baha'i faith. You participate with other spiritual organizations to promote understanding and acceptance. You assist in the production of Brilliant Star magazine for building young people into good citizens of the world. You're active in Uniting Bridges and the mission of a movement called Conversations in Color. What should we know about interfaith action for racial justice? Tell us a bit of maybe its history, who's involved, other initiatives, and how do we get involved?
Okay, well, anyone is welcome to participate in Interfaith Action for Racial Justice. Currently, we're working on the Postcard Project. That's our main initiative. How the group started, the Baha'i community reached out to some of our friends who are involved in interfaith prayer services and, you know, invited them to talk with us about what faith groups can do to promote racial justice. Because it's our belief that, you know, faith motivates a lot of people's actions. Churches and other faith groups are well positioned to motivate their congregations to promote racial justice. So we just started conversations. There are people from a wide variety of denominations. Any faith group is most welcome.
I want to ask one more thing to lay a foundation for getting to know you, the person. I noticed in your bio one of your enterprises is a medium designed for writing and editing, which also has a goal of publishing and marketing a series of novels. Being a curious guy, have you begun that series?
Well, I am wrapping up the first in the series. My hope is to publish a series of historical mystery novels. Anyone who's a fan of historical mystery knows that the series is how they're usually presented.
Yeah.
And I love to read them, so I just was dying to write one, and I hope to publish that this summer. This historical mystery series will take place in Milwaukee. The sleuth is a suffragist who's also a reporter in 1912. There was actually a referendum in Wisconsin at that time to give women the right to vote within the state, but that failed.
So this isn't just something coming from Amy Renshaw's creativity and imagination. There's a bunch of research involved in this series.
Yeah, I love doing the historical research. I've also written a book of religious nonfiction about the faith, also positioned in 1912. But yeah, the research is one of the things that makes it really fun.
Cool. Lots of note-taking.
Yes, lots of note-taking and book purchasing.
Good for you. Amy Renshaw on the phone with us. She's an editor and author, as we just heard, and an instigator of sorts. Specifically, our topic is the 2021 Chippewa Valley Community Postcard Project. And it's important that we talk about it because we have a deadline of June 1st. The project is quite an undertaking involving lots of people and a bevy of sponsors. We can all imagine where the genesis of the idea came from. We simply need to look around and listen to the news. How did this project get its legs?
Well, one of our members of Interfaith Action for Racial Justice is Amy Hahn, who is an art therapist in Eau Claire. She suggested, you know, that we incorporate the arts. It's such a serious issue, but the arts is kind of a way to make it accessible to everyone, to encourage contributions and participation from people of all ages, kids through grandparents, and it, I guess sort of a gentle way to raise awareness of the importance of racial justice. So that's kind of why we started thinking about the arts. These kinds of postcard projects have been done in other areas. It's just a very simple, you can create art or you can just write a slogan or a word, love or unity or whatever. We say on our flyer that stick figures are welcome. So it doesn't have to be fancy art. We want to show that our community members are thinking about this. And another aspect of it is on our flyer are some questions for families and individuals and friends to discuss about racial justice. How can we make the Chippewa Valley more welcoming to people of all races? Or what would it look like if people of all races were welcomed and appreciated here? So the idea is to spark conversation and then from that create some simple art. And another aspect is to cooperate with someone on creating the art. So like you start a drawing or a design and you pass it on to someone else to finish it. Each postcard is a cooperative effort. And then we're creating collages of like 12 postcards or something that will hang in different businesses and churches around town. The June 1st deadline, you know, we're hoping that people respond sooner than that. We hope to have collages around town in time for Juneteenth, which is June 19th.
Yeah. So the questions, more of them are things like, what can I do to connect with someone from a race or culture other than mine? How can I be a friend to all people? How can I stand up for someone who's being treated unfairly? How can I overcome a prejudice I have about people of a certain group? That would be an interesting one. I hope a lot of people decide to do that if they do sense a prejudice on their own, because that's the first step, taking care of it. What skills or strengths can I use or develop to help create racial justice? And what would the Chippewa Valley look like if people of all races and cultures were welcomed with, not just welcome, but welcomed with justice, compassion, and appreciation? Those are good questions. And this is a good time to make a project like this part of our lives before, God forbid, we're in the news.
Right, yes.
It's the old ounce of prevention adage, huh?
The thing is, if people are white, it's easy to look the other way and not think there's prejudice and racism here. This is a friendly place. But if you're a person of color, it really happens here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important, I think, for the white people of our community, who are like 98% of Eau Claire, to become aware of what's really going on and educate themselves and stand up for racial justice and be aware of like the ways we might be perpetuating prejudice or unfairness without even realizing it. It just takes a little bit of self-education, I think, and it's pretty important.
That actually is a phenomenon. People do things without realizing it, and it takes someone else to point it out.
Yeah, unconscious bias is a real thing, I mean, that we all have. We just all need to admit we all have prejudices. That's part of being human, but we can work on them.
Okay, so we have a bunch of details on the project itself, and it's very worthwhile. Tell us how everybody out there can participate. What are the steps to get a postcard, fill it out, and get it to you?
Okay, you can just grab a postcard or make one yourself out of cardstock or ask us for a free postcard. And our email is cvpostcard@gmail.com, CV for Chippewa Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ideally consult on one of these questions with a friend or family member, create some art together, or just create a design or a word or a poem with a little color on it.
Uh-huh.
And then either drop it off at one of our locations or, you know, mail it to us. There's an address on the flyer. And also we have a Facebook page if you would like to get more details there.
Wonderful. I have to say, Amy, it's good to know that there are doers like you in our midst. Keep up the good work. It'll be interesting to see the results and keep us posted on other things that you guys come up with. We want to spread it around.
That would be great. We hope that the Postcard Project becomes an annual event. Everyone is welcome to join in the planning.
Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot, Al.
Once again, the email address is cvpostcard@gmail.com and or find their Facebook page for details to get started. Chris Richards grew up in Wisconsin, and his album Wisconsin River is a tribute to his home state. That's down the road on Spectrum West. Hey, you know, it's Teacher Appreciation Week. Did you know that? And today, if you're listening on Thursday, marks the beginning of National Nurses Week. And with a daughter in that profession, and after the last year plus, I will celebrate and venerate that calling right along with you. One might have a difficult time figuring out what life must be like for Rob Bignell. It seems as though he might be too busy hiking around to have time to write about it. When you hear about how many books he playfully estimates that he has in progress, you'll understand my point. And yet somehow he fits everything in. Well, he can move one of those books in progress over to the completed list, Wisconsin's Best Wildflower Hikes. And when he's doing something other than hiking or writing, that's always a good time to catch him. Hitting. Remember not to do the ing. Most of your things have just an in apostrophe. Hitting the trail.
Right.
Hitting the trail. Is that the series name and then you just add a location after it?
Exactly. Yeah, it's that simple. So there's several different series that I've written. The Hitting the Trail is the most common one, and those are usually regional or topical books set in the upper Midwest or a very specific location. I mean, most of those books are about Wisconsin or Minnesota. A couple of the other series I have are best sites to see about national parks. Here's the 10 must-see things at each park and or which trail you should hike to get there. And then Heading to the Cabin, which are regional books mainly about the North Woods of Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the Upper Peninsula, aimed at people who own cabins or are visiting, vacationing up there.
Yeah.
And then Hikes with Tykes.
Hikes with Tykes, so, yeah.
Yeah, those are just tip books on how to hike with kids.
Tykes right, should take more hikes.
Definitely.
You know, as a parent, often you don't do things, and holding them back keeps your child from one of the best-kept secrets of childhood. Sometimes we don't think they might like it, and it turns out it's exactly what they needed.
Right, exactly. And I don't know how many times I've told my son I wanted to go on a hike and tried to really sell him the idea, and he's like, no, I don't want to go.
Yeah.
But then I make him go, and sure enough, he has a great time, and then he has to go back.
I received a text from my youngest daughter just the other day with a photograph of her two young kids flying a kite. And I said, man, that's one of my favorite things to do. And that's a good example of something that may take a little work on the parents' part. It's not very technical, and it's not very electronic, but it's mesmerizing for kids.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Actually, hiking with kids is what got me into writing all of these 30 hiking books that I have out there. And Hikes with Hikes was the first one. It was just sort of a matter of I wanted to bond with my son and get him to enjoy some of the experiences that I enjoyed as a kid. So we started hiking when he was really young. As soon as he could hold his head up, so I could put him in a child carrier and put him on my back.
Cool.
We've been hiking ever since, almost 14 years now.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the book. Wisconsin's Best Wildflower Hikes. I see the cover photo is that of a false sunflower. How can something be a false flower? And does that say that we cannot take everything flowers tell us as gospel?
That's right. Yeah, there's a lot of flowers out there that are named false flowers. We have false anemones and a false rue, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It's because they look a lot like a sunflower or an anemone, but they technically, if you look at the genetics of that flower, are actually unrelated. Sort of just a fluke of evolution that one kind of flower, species of flower, developed sort of the same appearance or the same strategies that another species of flower did. I guess a good example in the animal world would be flight. You know, birds are not related to bats at all. You have to go back pre-dinosaur era in order to find a common ancestor. But they both evolved ways to fly. So the same thing with a flower. Some flowers look a lot like other flowers, even though they're, like I said, aren't really connected at all. They're millions of years apart on the evolutionary ladder.
To give people a good idea of how your book starts and some of what it contains, there's some really good material just in the first 10 pages. Here's what's there. Tips for wildflower hikes, identifying wildflowers, photo tips, games and activities, focus of the book, and maps your top 10, and that's followed by trails in each region. Does it take a while for you to put these books together? Are they works in progress that you just accumulate?
Yeah, definitely. I must have 200 books in progress right now. just because as you travel to each different region, you know, across the United States, you've got a variety of different books. You've got regional books. You've got topical books that are going on. So, I mean, if you take a trip to, let's do Willow Falls State Park in Hudson, you know, you've got trails that are going through historic farmsteads. You've got historical trails. You've got trails that are going through prairie areas that are being replanted and reclaimed. You've got prairie and meadow trails that are great for seeing flowers. Woodland trails, great, of course, for autumn leaves. And you've got the waterfall there, which is a waterfall trail. If I go up to Willow State Park, you know, I'm researching five or six books at one time. I'd say the wildflower book has probably been a work in progress for about 8 to 9 years.
That's Rob Bignell. Wisconsin's Best Wildflower Hikes is the name of the book. It's his 30th hiking guidebook. We are, Rob, smack dab kind of in the wildflower season. Spring's good for it. It's a healthy season for the flowers. The leaves aren't out. They get unobstructed sunlight, although the leaves are popping right now, and it's convenient for the hiker. Less heat, less bugs. The bugs are the worst part of living in the Midwest. I don't get that.
I go back and forth on bugs. On one hand, bugs are so important in terms of the ecosystem.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have a lot of bugs out there, it really cuts down on your bird population, and then suddenly your ecosystem starts collapsing. But at the same time, I can't stand mosquitoes. But, you know, there's easy ways to get around that. Usually bugs aren't going to bother you. It's just the mosquitoes or maybe, you know, a group of gnats, ticks.
Yes.
Those are sort of the three big ones. Gnats are no big deal. You just keep walking until you get out of their swarm. You know, mosquitoes, the easy thing to do is use some lemon eucalyptus. You can buy that at really any store that sells bug spray. It's non-toxic. It doesn't leave any residue. Some people don't like the combination of those two smells. I think even if you dislike the smell, it smells better than, you know, one of the poison chemical sprays on you. That smells pretty horrible, too. You know, you'd mentioned right now is a great time for going out to see spring flowers, and you're absolutely right. The spring ephemerals, and those are the ones that grow in woodlands. We just was hiking in Menominee on the Red Cedar Trail over the weekend, and we've got violets already popping up, hepaticas up, Ask Flowers pretty much is gone, though I saw that recently. Bloodroot was just popping out this week in full bloom. And there'll be a number of other flowers that pop up. Spring ephemerals, for the listeners who don't know, are those that grow in woodlands but only grow before the leaves have filled out in the tree canopy. Mm. Once the canopy fills out, then, of course, there's not enough sunlight. Mm. But in addition to woodland flowers, they're also popping up in a lot of meadows and prairie areas. We don't have as many here in our part of the state, in the Chippewa Valley area. But you don't have to drive too far, and you'll come across meadows and restored prairies. Those all start popping up in about early to mid-May.
Now, Wisconsin is home to more than 500 wildflower species. I'm going to get basic here and run the risk of appearing very unsophisticated, but we should get to the roots of things, and who knows, there might be a surprise in the answer. What is the difference between a flower and a wildflower, and do some domestic flowers invade the other domain?
They do, yeah, absolutely. So the domesticated flowers originally were wildflowers, or at least they evolved from wildflowers. A number of garden flowers do get out into nature. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. Daylilies, often in prairie areas, for example.
So somebody found this flower and they said, that's too beautiful to be sitting out here in the woods. Let's figure out why it grows, how it grows, dig up the bulbs.
Yeah, and some wildflowers, of course, can't really become domesticated. Yellow lady slippers, their roots really rely upon fungus that are growing in the soil at a certain site. So the chance that fungus is growing, you know, in the soil next to your house is not good.
Sure.
You know, lady slippers aren't necessarily great. In fact, it's illegal to try to transplant them. You know, that's true. I guess I sort of equate garden flowers to dogs. The difference between, do you want to see, you know, wolves in the wild, or do you want to see dogs show? And, you know, I love dogs, and dog shows are great. Nothing wrong with them. I go to gardens a lot. But it's not quite the same, and the hike that you would go on to see the garden flower is a lot different than what you would do if you were going out in nature.
Yeah.
You go out in nature, it's sort of a Where's Waldo kind of a thing. You're looking for that wildflower, and it becomes sort of a game to try to find it. And then, of course, the challenge is once you do find it to identify it.
Well, you mentioned some of the other series. You know, one has to think when one publishes books like yours and series like yours about a legacy. And these books are going to be cherished members of many home libraries for years. They should have good shelf life. I thought, you know, a good sign that we're doing all the right things would be that there are always more and more natural places and things to write about rather than less and less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, in Wisconsin and Minnesota in particular, there's been a real effort to try to preserve areas, especially where the flora and the fauna there are rare, or it's a unique ecosystem, to ensure that those plants and animals don't go extinct. But it's always a struggle. It's always a fight because there's potential uses for that land. So it's a real balancing act. You can see in certain areas where the balance has maybe gone out of whack. Not so much in Wisconsin, I would say, but for example, in Minnesota, if you were to go to the southwest where the prairie areas are, almost the entire original tall grass prairie has been plowed under. What hasn't been plowed under, you know, we've built houses and roads and sidewalks on and so on. Mm-hmm. So there's very few remnants left of those prairies out there. You know, for Wisconsin, we've done an exceptional job of trying to preserve areas, and I have a difficult time thinking of another state that comes close to preserving land like we do, preserved for nature. We don't allow any other use of it.
It's always been interesting to me. It has turned into the preferences of a political party.
Right.
It appears to me as if it's always going to be two steps forward and one step back, or one step forward and two steps back. It'd be nice if we could just keep walking forward.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting game. But we do have a lot of, you know, private nonprofit organizations outside of the government that are also trying to preserve land. For example, preserving the Kinnikinick River over by River Falls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's working.
I'm always impressed if you can spell Kinnikinick. You know, good for it.
Well, and what's worse is they spell it differently in other states than they do here.
Wow. So, there's more than just one here. And
there's more than one.
There's one down in Milwaukee, I know.
Yep, and that's spelled differently than the one
in
Pierce County.
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Which is spelled differently than the one in Michigan.
The book, ladies and gentlemen, is Wisconsin's Best Wildflower Hikes. It's hot off the presses. So, Rob, where can we get the book?
definitely you can go to Amazon.com and purchase it either as an ebook or order the paperback. You can go to any local bookstore and they can order it for you, certainly. The one store that carries it is Bookends on Main in downtown Menominee, my hometown.
All right.
They've got it. My website's dayhikingtrails.com, and then there's a blog that's linked and connected to that.
I'm looking forward to the next 200 interviews because you said you have 200 books in the works, so I better let you go. Rob Bignell, thank you.
Thank you. You have a good one, Al.
Enjoying our first May Spectrum West of 2021. I'm Al Ross. Good to have you along. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, a locally owned community bank, now offering checking account options. Charter Bank is dedicated to being invested in the community, customers, and employees. More information is at charterbank.bank.
Three drinks in at the Buckhorn Tavern, got to noticing a picture hung behind the bar. Hey, Ole, who's in this photo? The young man standing next to Dillinger's car. And my buddy Ole, the bartender, says, his name was Walleye Fingers, had a shop in Cribbets where he sold live bait. Told stories that would blow your mind, he knew everything to know about the dairy state. He was Walleye, Walleye Fingers, he just missed making all the history books. Walleye, Walleye Fingers, bona fide legend of the great North Woods.
Chris Richards grew up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, and has since traveled and lived in other American whereabouts like Nashville and Los Angeles. But he knows Wisconsin, knows it well, all of it. And he's keenly aware of some of our history thanks to music he's heard and music he's written. What you're listening to in the background is called Walleye Fingers. Chris will explain its foundation, and it's a Northwest Wisconsin tune of sorts. Maybe if there isn't one, there should be a songwriter laureate position, the keeper of the tunage and the writer of someday historical melodies that tell our tales. Chris Richards' latest album, Wisconsin River, is his sixth. He's always wanted to write more about his home state, and pandemic isolation back in his hometown provided the perfect opportunity to work on that objective.
He was a lifelong confidant, a Liberace, showed Susie favor how to lengthen.
So I need to comment, and this is a selfish comment. It affects the audience indirectly. I want to thank you for being so thorough. I mean, I am the recipient of not only the music, but background and lyrics on all the songs contained on your new album, Wisconsin River. And because of it, I feel like you and I are old friends. There are some other aspects of our process that lend themselves to thinking that Rod Serling is standing in the corner. And, I'll get to that in a moment. You spent 25 years, you used the word looping, between Southern California and Tennessee. And what a time you chose to visit the old hometown.
I don't know if I'm the guy who can really see the future, but there was something about last March when I knew we were going to be in trouble for quite a while. I knew everything was going to be a little upside down. I just had a hunch that that was how at least part of the year was going to play out. I really had been wanting to get back to Wisconsin for a full summer. That was kind of my dream. I've lived mostly in Los Angeles or Nashville, but I'd come back for a week or two and just be like, oh, man, I wish I could spend a couple months here. And when the pandemic hit, I was like, you know what, this might be my shot. I basically packed up everything in Nashville and came to Sheboygan, and I'm lucky to have my folks here and my brothers around. And,
okay.
And I just sort of planted myself here and tried to help them ride it out. And when I wasn't doing that, I would take these trips around the state. You know, over the past 15 or 20 years, I kind of had a box full of stuff. Here and there, every few years or so, I'd work on a Wisconsin-related song or idea, or I'd find some article that I thought was really interesting. I'd kind of throw it in there, and I'm like, sooner or later, I'm going to get to this thing. There was just something about when the pandemic started, I was like, I think this might be the chance to sit down and sort through that stuff and really make something cohesive out of it. And that's kind of what ended up happening.
Were there any jokes going around about Chris back home living in the basement?
My folks loved it. You know, we all knew it was a temporary thing. There's something about coming home. You know, they needed a hand, and my mom had been talking about redoing her kitchen for 15 years. And I said, you know what, I'm here. I'll kind of project manage it for you. That was kind of my my big task. That took 3 or 4 months. But when there was a lull in the construction, I go to Wausau up in the Northwoods, or I go to the Dells, and I'd block out a week or 4 or 5 days and sit and work on songs.
That had to be fun to do that after all those years not hitting those places. Let's touch on some of those weird little similarities that led me to believe that you and I were destined to connect. I have some ties to Sheboygan, as I told you, and Manitowoc, where Jim Krieger was from and went back to die, sadly. And I was in Sheboygan this past weekend. I did not, however, roll down the Volrath Bowl. Should have, but I didn't. Here's another one of those weird things. As I was driving back, and I was listening to your material, familiarizing myself with it, guess what song came on as I was just pulling into Fond du Lac?
Fond du Lac Jail.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
I went,
uh-oh, quickly whipped my head around to see if Serling was sitting in the back seat. So that was cool. We're on the phone with Chris Richards, singer-songwriter, Wisconsin guy, born and raised, and been around, and now he's back, and he has a wonderful new album. It's called Wisconsin River, and it's about people and places that have come before and things that actually Chris has experienced. And in the historic part, you, Chris, had a partner, if only spiritual, and she's been gone for nearly 50 years now. Tell us about Helene. Is that the way her name's pronounced?
That's how I would pronounce it, but I've heard it pronounced Helene.
Helene? Okay.
I'm not sure exactly how she would have pronounced it, but yeah, she was something else. I don't know a ton about her personally. 15 or 20 years ago, I found out about the work that she had done.
Just to set the stage, Helene or Helene Stratman Thomas, way back in the day, the 30s and 40s, she went around and she documented and recorded music, the people who did it and the music they were doing around Wisconsin.
Yeah, and the UP, and there was a lot of collecting. I think there was a realization, you know, right before World War II that some of these folk songs and these folk traditions were starting to disappear, and the Library of Congress started sending people around the country to sort of capture them before they disappeared. In my investigation of country music and Western music and deep Southern music, that kind of stuff was popularized, but I wasn't aware that someone was doing the exact same thing up in northern Wisconsin. And this woman, Helene Stratman Thomas, was going around with a recordist. She was based in Madison. I imagine she left Madison with some idea of who she was going to see, but I think part of that job was the two of us get into a car and go somewhere, and then we'll ask people, who's the person around here that knows the folk songs?
Sure.
And they'd knock on doors, and it would be sort of word of mouth. And I would imagine that, at least in my mind, she had a little bit of a map, but then you would kind of go off on these side trips, and you would find these people who knew the old songs. And she really captured them for someone like me to come along and say, oh, this is really interesting material.
If you think about it, without the work that she did, that she and a few others did, some of this precious music and its sources could very well be lost. Good for her. By the way, I got to tell you that I can see how all this history became like a book that you could not put down, because I just did surface research the last few days, and that has made me want to dig deeper. So it's fascinating stuff. So Helene, she comes out with this stuff. By the way, Wisconsin Public Radio was the source of a series about her travels. Judy Rose of Wisconsin Public Radio's Simply Folk did a 13-part series back in the 80s called The Wisconsin Patchwork, which highlighted Helene's recordings.
That's right.
And now Chris Richards comes along with his own album. Some of the songs are about actual back there history, but others are about things that have happened along your road, things that you've seen. They describe kind of life as it is or has been in the recent past anyway, and they have what it takes to someday be historical.
I would love that. I would love that. I think part of me doing this is just I've always been naturally curious about things like some of these topics, some of these stories. I know when I was a kid, I loved story songs. I think the roots of this project are from, you know, when I was much younger. So like you said, Helene Stratman Thomas was a real explosion in my head. Like, wow, I had no idea that this history existed in Wisconsin. And in a lot of ways, like when I realized that Jim Krieger wrote the classic 70s song, We Just Disagree, he he's also the same guy that wrote The Bears Still Suck, and I said there was something about that.
That's right.
That just blew my mind, and I said, I have to find out how this guy who did these two completely polar opposite things, what's his story? How does somebody bookend their career like that? That sent me off on sort of investigation into who Jim Krieger was and what he did when this collection was written. I said, there's got to be a song in here about Jim Krieger. He's a cornerstone for me.
And the song on the album that is about him is called Bruiser. The other songs on the album Wisconsin River are Sawdust Town, Hard Frost, Walleye Fingers, Yellow Thunder Walking Home, Fond du Lac Jail, we've talked about that, Don't Let Me Die in Tennessee, Blackberry Heaven, Black Summer, Moon Over Michigan. And I want you to tell us a little bit more about Satchel Came to Sparta, because that is a pretty special song in itself, given the event that happened, but it had close ties to you. Tell us about that.
Absolutely, yeah. Back in the late 50s, there were barnstorming groups of baseball players, particularly players from the Negro Leagues, would come in the late summer, and they would get with a team, and they would play small towns around Wisconsin. And my dad was a pitcher of some renown. He actually still has the strikeouts record at the University of Wisconsin. He was a great pitcher in the 50s and 60s.
Did he have a cool nickname? Sorry to interrupt, but baseball players back in the day had cool, you know, like Lefty, or did he have a nickname?
He didn't have a nickname back then. He does have a great nickname now, oddly. He's known in Sheboygan. If you ask who White Shoes is, they will tell you.
Oh.
They will point you to my dad.
Okay, good. I'm sorry to interrupt. You were telling the story.
No, but my dad was about 21 years old. He went back to Sparta. He grew up in Sparta, Wisconsin, and he was back for the summer playing for the City League, and on their schedule was the Havana Cuban All-Stars. That included the great pitcher Satchel Paige, who was in his mid-50s at that point. And my dad has told me this story many times over my life. There was something about the way he told it in the last couple of years where I was like, I can see this whole thing in my mind. I need to put this down and write the song about the time that Satchel Paige came to Little Sparta, Wisconsin, population 6,000, and my dad was the opposing pitcher that day.
I love the lyrics, and I'm going to play a little bit of that when we're going out here. He had a robin's egg blue Cadillac. The guys asked him to go out for a beer afterwards, but he didn't have time. He had to hit the road. That was kind of neat.
He had to go. He had things to do, people to see.
That added to the legend. Did he get an autograph and stuff or not?
He didn't, but I do have a couple of really great pictures of him standing and getting his picture taken with Satchel and the head coach, and so that's really all that remains of that. My dad was busy and young. He didn't think to capture very much, but we were able to go back and find some photos. And, you know, it was really fun for me. I really wanted to cover the whole state when I was writing these songs, and I really wanted to cover the west side of the state, which I don't get to very often, but I wanted to make sure that I wrote about some things on that side of the state too, which was really cool. And the setting for Walleye Fingers, one of the songs that you mentioned, was sort of a composite of a bunch of things, but the setting was the Buckhorn Tavern just north of you and Rice Lake.
I want to know the stats of how many Buckhorn Taverns there are in Wisconsin, because I know several.
Yeah, that one was a classic. It was it was sort of a folk music hub, and one of the people that I mentioned as a real source of some of this stuff, James Leary, he worked on a bunch of those projects that Wisconsin Public Radio has supported over the years. He grew up in Rice Lake, knowing some of those people that would kind of circulate through there, and the owner of the Buckhorn Tavern was a collector of folk instruments, and that was sort of a hub on that side of the state. Really fun to think back and ponder what that must have been like back in the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, including the ever-popular Hardanger fiddle.
Yeah, the Viking cello and all kinds of weird folk instruments that were collected and passed around.
How can people get a copy of this album? Because if you're from Wisconsin, you're going to want one. And secondly, does the biographical and photographs and things come with it, or do they have to visit a website? How do we do that?
I try to sort of take what used to be in the liner notes of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
I try to build that on lines, and so I did build a companion website.
Okay.
It's WisconsinRiverAlbum.com. And then the best place to get a CD, it's chrisrichards.bandcamp.com.
We should, and because we should, we will, thank you for doing this album. I'm sure the Wisconsin Historical Society has a place for this in their archives.
you know, you live in a place and you might not be able to see the magic so easily. And because I've been gone mostly for 25 years, it's easier for me to see it when I come back. And there's so many cool things in Wisconsin that you can't find anywhere else. And those are the things that I gravitate towards. And I really just wanted to reflect some of those things and some of those interesting historical things back to people that live in Wisconsin was really the idea.
Chris, thanks for being with us here on WPR. I have a feeling we'll talk again.
Thank you so much, Al. I really appreciate it.
It was a summer night in Sparta, Wisconsin. So hot it ached to breathe. A robin's egg blue Cadillac came floating down the street. It slowly slid right past us with its windows partly down, playing Kansas City, Kansas City, here I come. Driving was Leroy Satchel Paige, the Negro League baseball star. We followed him to the buzzing crowd down at Memorial Baseball Park. He'd come from many miles away to storm our Cooley barns, to mesmerize with his fastballs and his Alabama charm. The city team took the lead with young Billy on the mound. We peeked into the dugout to see old Satchel nodded out. Then at the end of three, he finally stood and grabbed his glove. A murmur spread through the bleachers, and then a cheer went up. Satchel came to Sparta in 1959. He was north of 50 and two decades past his prime. They still tell the stories of the numbers that he fanned all across the dusty diamonds of the dairy.
Well, I have to admit that I really do know that it's a mortal sin to interrupt a story song, but here's the salvation. Just get your copy of Wisconsin River by Chris Richards, and you'll be able to listen to that song and all the others at your leisure. Okay? Okay. Because I got some things I want to tell you about. Did you know that students from DeLong Middle School, North Star Middle School, Memorial High School, and North High School are going to collaborate with local artists Saturday, May 8th, 10 to 3, at Artisan Forge Studios? They're going to paint a big mural on one of the garage doors. How cool is that? Did you know that live music is coming to the theater and beer to the patio with Music in May at the Phipps? Saturday, Bluegrass Wonder Duo Gentleman Dreadnought. They kick off the Music in May concert series that begins at 7:30 p.m. How cool is that? This weekend, St. Croix Festival Theater opens a staged reading of Red by John Logan. Huh? Lots going on. Things are looking up. That's it for this week. We'll meet again next week. Till then, share your notions about things and people you'd like to hear. Keep in touch. SpectrumWest at WPR.org. For now, thanks to Kate for archiving and promotion, and thank you guys. See you next week.